Lesson 9, Section 1, News in Brief.
There was an assassination attempt against Indian Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi today. A man fired several shots at Gandhi and other Indian leaders participating in an open-air prayer meeting. Gandhi was not injured. Six people received minor wounds when the gunman burst from the bushes, where he had apparently hidden prior to the ceremony to avoid security checks. He surrendered when guards surrounded him. Those in charge of Gandhi security have been suspended, and an investigation is underway. Jeff Moore, NASA's top official in charge of the shuttle program when Challenger exploded, announced today he's leaving his new post as director of the Johnson Space Center. Moore will take a leave of absence and then be reassigned to NASA headquarters in Washington. NPR's Daniel Swerdling reports.
The obvious question, of course, is this. Is Jeff Moore leaving his job and taking a year off work because of the Challenger accident? Moore came under quite a bit of pressure before a congressional committee earlier this summer when his former assistant testified that he told Moore in detail almost a year ago that there were serious problems with the shuttle rocket's O-rings, the same O-rings that eventually caused the Challenger accident. That testimony flatly contradicted what Moore has been saying all along, that he didn't know the O-ring problems were serious until after the Challenger exploded. Congressional sources who've interviewed Moore told me that they have no way of knowing just who's telling the truth, Moore or Moore's former assistant, but one top congressional aide who met with Moore recently says the NASA veteran's been depressed since the Challenger blew up. He says, quote, Moore doesn't have the edge he used to. He's hollow inside, just like a lot of guys at NASA who worked on the shuttle. Jess Moore, the aide says, is not the man he was before the accident, and he needs a rest. I'm Daniel Swerdling in Washington.
Section 2. News in detail.
Indian Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi survived an assassination attempt in New Delhi today. The assailant fired a succession of shots at Gandhi, who was attending a Hindu prayer service with his wife and Indian President Zail Singh. Official sources have called the incident a major security lapse. Witnesses say Gandhi told security guards two times he had heard gunshots. The security forces reportedly dismissed the noise as motorcycle backfire. It was over half an hour later that police finally surrounded and captured the gunman. Six people were injured during the arrest. The BBC's Humphrey Hawksley reports.
An official statement from the Home Ministry said that those police officials who were directly responsible for the security arrangements for Mr. Gandhi had been suspended from duty. Senior officials in the ministry say that a top-level investigation is underway to determine why the security around the Prime Minister, who's meant to be one of the most closely protected government leaders in the world, collapsed, and how a gunman armed with an illegally manufactured revolver broke through the security cordon undetected to get within a few feet of the Prime Minister. Police say the gunman, who's in his 20s, may even have fired at Mr. Gandhi and his party as they were approaching the area to commemorate the birthday of the independence leader Mahatma Gandhi, who was cremated there. The area was searched immediately, but security men failed to spot the gunman, who was hiding on top of a concrete shelter hidden among thick green vines. The man opened fire again when Mr. Gandhi was leaving half an hour later. But when he was spotted, eyewitnesses say he threw up his arms and shouted in Hindi, "I surrender." Police say he's not connected with any terrorist organization, nor is he part of the Sikh movement which murdered Mr. Gandhi's mother, Indira, 2 years ago. Humphrey Hawksley, BBC, Delhi.
Section 3, Special Report.
It is not just the weather with which farmers contend. There are higher costs for growing food and lower prices when selling it. And these combine to make farming an increasingly difficult life, especially for small family farms. In New York, a new organization called Farm Hands is trying to help struggling farms in the region by linking city dwellers with farmers. As John Kalish reports, the scheme seems to benefit both.
Last week, two actors, a housewife, a tour guide, a dog walker, and an unemployed social worker, all from the New York metropolitan area, spent a day working on Hall Gibson's fruit and vegetable farm, located in the upstate New York town of Brewster. The contingent also included 2 4-year-olds. The group listened attentively as Gibson gave a lengthy orientation talk, complete with aerial photographs of his 125-acre farm.
This area was called part of the New York Milk Shed. One of the big incentives to producing milk in this area was the founding of the Borden plant.
After the orientation talk, the group walked to a 5-acre field that was lined with rows of tomatoes and turnips, eggplants and cabbage, Gibson gave some brief picking instructions to two women who were going to harvest cherry tomatoes.
If they are split like this, throw them away or eat them.
Okay.
The transplanted urbanites picked 6 bushels of tomatoes and 60 pints of raspberries over the course of several hours. The farmhands were perfect strangers when they left Manhattan, but out in the field in Putnam County, they had no trouble striking up conversations that included such heady topics as romance and television. Laura Moore, a housewife and part-time teacher from Brooklyn, has made 4 trips to area farms with her daughter, Jessie. She was picking yellow, low-acid tomatoes as she explained why she enjoys the farmhand program.
It's therapeutic, mentally, physically, and it's exhilarating. This is my way of getting out, escaping the city life for a while. I love the city, but in the fresh air, you get a feeling that you are really living.
In addition to the one-day farm outings, farmhands also places individuals on farms for periods ranging from a week to several months. In exchange for their labor, participants get a minimum wage, room and board, or produce to take back with them to the city. In its first year of operation, Farmhands has placed 20 people on farms for a period of 2 months or longer. More than 200 people have gone on the one-day work intensives or the field trips that are often more play than work. Hall Gibson has had 4 long-term farmhands this summer. At the moment, he's benefiting from the hard work of a 28-year-old New York City painter named Debbie Fisher. Because Gibson's farm is organic, weeds are a major problem. Farmer Gibson says that when Debbie Fisher clears weeds from the field, she works like a demon.
She's been just driven to rescue crops, and she's rescued a number of crops. I mean, my bok choy crop, best I've ever had, was rescued by her. Debbie is a gem.
The Farmhands program was founded by 27-year-old Wendy Dubit, an enthusiastic advocate of linking farms and cities. In an interview at a farmer's market in New York City, Dubit said farmhands may mean cheap labor for farmers, but she maintains the program has a broader impact.
It's not just the labor that helps those farmers. It's the appreciative consumers who suddenly realize after an hour of picking raspberries and scratching their own arms on the brambles, they understand the farm reality and the value of food, and they become valuable consumers and customers for those farmers.
Dubit says there was only one farmhand placement that did not work out this year, a 15-year-old football player who antagonized his host family in upstate New York. Farmhands are currently working in New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey. Plans are already underway to expand the Farmhands program to Maryland, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and Vermont.